listening to the Section 5 podcast.
Welcome to the Section 5 podcast on a Game 2 Tuesday where the Celtics overcame a 12-point deficit with about 2:46 left in the third quarter to defeat the Toronto Raptors 102-99. Section 5 crew, we're all here, all four of us. Me, Adam, Trey, Mark, and what a game, guys. We talked about the first game. The Celtics led from start to finish, wire to wire. We knew the Raptors would make some adjustments, and we all had the sense that this would be a much closer game. And we all agreed that we didn't think game one necessarily had any bearing on how long this series would go. We felt this series would still be a 6 or 7 game series, even though we all picked the Celtics to ultimately win it. But now the Celtics are up 2-0. And we're just going to jump right into it. And we're going to start off with Marcus Smart. Actually, before I get into Marcus Smart, I do want to give you guys a few stats to sort of capture where the Celtics are at this point in the playoffs. The Celtics are 5-1 against Toronto this season. They've won 3 straight games against them in the bubble. This is the Celtics' 6th straight playoff win, which is one shy of their franchise record of 7, obviously coming off of the sweep of the Philadelphia 76ers. The Celtics, oddly enough, or maybe not surprisingly, were 2-10 in their last 12 playoff games officiated by Tony Brothers. So take that for data. And Jason Tatum, who kind of got lost in the Marcus Smart hurricane that took over Toronto, game-high 34 points with 8 rebounds and 4 assists, which on any other night would be the lead for our podcast. But obviously we're going to start this podcast with the man himself, the one we love and trust, Mr. Marcus Smart, who hit 5 three-pointers in a 3-minute and 4-second span, the last of which was a 4-point play to help erase that 12-point deficit. So we're just going to jump into it right there. And Mark, I'd like to start with you. Give me your reaction to this game, specifically what you saw from Marcus Smart.
From Marcus Smart, the first thing that came to mind before he went on fire was when he made one of the worst plays of the series so far, where he fouled Siakam and then like Ric Flair flopped, almost got the call, and then it got reversed and was a huge momentum swing at the time. And I see that come out and I'm like, I'm like, oh man, that's, you know, not a good play by him at all. And then just a couple minutes later, you know, he hits a 3, then he hits another 3. Then he hits another 3. And most of them were open, but there were a couple that were like that typical Marcus Smart, no, 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 yes kind of threes. Like he hit a couple of step backs that were not really contested, but he wasn't wide open either. And everything was going down for him. As you said, he capped it off with a 4-point play and really just carried the load for them in the fourth quarter when they really needed that spark. They needed to score quick because they were down pretty big and they were running out of time. And Smart hit 3 threes really quick. The first 3 that he hit were within a minute or two of each other. And right then the Celtics had, you know, tied the game or gotten within 1. I can't remember. I think they actually tied the game. And then from there, they never really looked back. Everybody else kind of chipped in, but Marcus Smart was there to hit a big shot every time they needed to, which is great to see because we've talked about the team having issues with scoring consistency and getting that scoring punch after their top 3 guys with Gordon Hayward out.
Yeah, Celtics bench, they didn't perform as well as they did in game one. And we'll talk a lot about Robert Williams, but outside of his 11 points, 10 of which were in the first quarter, they got 2 points from Grant Williams. So the Celtics starters did 99% of the damage in this one. And I actually did not watch this game televised. I listened to it on the radio, which with Grandy and Max, and they're actually one of the best sort of duos that I like to listen to.
They're so good.
Comes to games. I mean, Doris Burke is great. I forget who Doris Burke was doing the game with today. But if you haven't listened to a Celtics game on the radio, I highly suggest you do it. And it's a different thrill when you can't see what's happening and you can only hear it through the radio and you're reacting to Grandy, who's one of the best play-by-play guys. So it was really great. But Grandy had one of the lines of the night. I tweeted it, and he said, Marcus Smart's probably the only human who steps into the booth and comes back out as Marcus Smart. And that was in the middle of his five straight three-pointers. So, Adam, give me your take of this game. This will go down in history. I mean, when we watch sort of go back in time during this Celtics era, or ultimately when number 36 goes into the rafters, I'm confident that this game might be one of his defining sort of moments in his Celtics playoff career. So, Adam, give me your take on the game, what you saw, how impressive it was for Marcus Smart. Just what's your reaction to what you saw in game two?
I mean, the first three quarters weren't, you know, he had a couple of low moments in those first three quarters, and nothing was lower than what Mark alluded to with the flop against Siakam, which ended up costing us, I think, 3 points on that play. But man, that fourth quarter was special. He came into the fourth 2-for-8 shooting, 4-for-5 in the fourth. I think he hit all of his threes in the fourth. It was just, you know, this guy needs to be named captain like ASAP. I mean, I don't know what we're waiting for. He's on his way to getting his numbers retired in those rafters if he keeps this up, because there's no way that we're gonna trade Marcus Smart. Like, no one else could replicate that. And I think Tatum had some great quotes after the game, just, you know, praising, you know, being able to play with a guy like Marcus Smart, because there's no one like him. He's a guy that people wanted to go to battle with, and you could see with his play on the court and how he just, you know, he brings together teammates and, you know, on the court. And I saw a moment during the game where I think it was kind of late in the game where we were getting some fouls called on us and started to react a little bit. I think it was right after the Tatum tech, and you just seen him kind of, you know, bark at the team like, yo, chill with the complaining, you know, let's get composed and finish this game off right. And, you know, we did by the, you know, heroics of Kemba to finish that off.
Trey, give me your thoughts on game two, which was, as a Celtics fan, you think that you've seen it all. And then, of course, you've seen something that you've never seen before. And Marcus Smart was front and center and all that. So give me your reaction specifically to the third and fourth quarters. And I want to ask you a question to follow up on that. Is the series over?
Okay, so you can call Marcus Smart a lot. You can call him a flopper, a grifter. He's got many nicknames. Smarticus, Wolverine, young game changer. But he's just a hustler. He played defense the first half, and then he came out and just shot the ball, made three after three. Ended up with 19 points. On a side note, we all play fantasy, DraftKings Daily Fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And he only had 3 rebounds and 1 assist. Now, Marcus Smart can get more boards and more assists than that. But he wasn't doing those things early in the game. Had he been doing those things early in the game and then he went off, his stat line would have looked even better. But yeah, he's the best teammate to have. He just hustles out there. And what's interesting also is that Kemba got off to a bad start. And then in the fourth quarter, he turned into cardiac Kemba in the last couple of minutes.
I think the two of them combined for 9 of 10, from the field in the fourth quarter.
Right.
Six of seven from three, I believe.
And to answer your follow-up question, is the series over? I would say the Celtics are feeling a little sweepy.
Mm. Like a Philly, like a Philly sweep or a gentleman sweep?
I don't know. We feeling a little sweepy. Just a gentleman sweep. I don't know. I think we could sweep them. We can't let up. Like Jason Tatum said, they can't take their foot off the gas.
Yeah, when Adam told me that Fred VanVleet's family arrived in the bubble, I think I texted him like, yeah, he's going for 50. And then I thought about it for a second and I'm like, sometimes that could be a distraction. And then lo and behold, Jimmy Butler has had a quote come out like, yeah, I'm not inviting my family here because this is a business trip. But notably, Giannis had his fiance or his wife and his baby front and center at their game. And Jimmy responds that this is a business trip. But I think that I'm a little concerned, as crazy as this sounds, I'm a little concerned because of what I read about the bench. 10 points from Robert Williams in the first quarter. He ends up with 11, and Grant Williams gives you 2 points. And I don't know. I'm concerned about that bench and that production. Brad Wanamaker gave you nothing. I mean, there's some positives, obviously, to take about off of this game. The Celtics fought through some adversity. They fought through a horrendous shooting start from Kemba Walker. Jaylen Brown sort of carried them early in the game, handed the baton to Robert Williams, and the Celtics ultimately scored 102 points. And it seems like the defense is what's going to win them this series. But I am concerned a little bit because there's a lot of weight for the starting five to carry. And Toronto, ultimately, their strength was supposed to be their depth, and we'll see if that starts to sort of come through as the series goes on. Mark, when last time we spoke, I asked you if your feelings had changed on the longevity of the series. You said you still expected it to go 7 games. After what you saw today, do you think the series is over? The team that goes up 2-0 in a best of 7 wins the series 93% of the time.
I don't want to go as far as to say I think the series is over, but I'd be shocked if the Celtics lost it. Toronto came back from 2-0 in the conference finals against Milwaukee last year. So they don't have Kawhi, but most of these guys, like, they've been here before. They've been in this spot against a really good team, and they were able to come back and do it. So you can't count Toronto out. I mean, this game was a dogfight the whole way. The Celtics could have very easily lost this game, and it's a totally different conversation. But I just don't see the Celtics losing, you know, 4 games out of 5, actually. They got to lose 4 out of 5 to lose this series. And I don't see anyone beating them 4 out of 5 times. I mean, 4 out of 7 is going to be tough enough to beat the Celtics to knock them out. But now you got to beat them 4 out of 5, and that just seems damn near impossible. I do share your concern with the bench, though. They got 3 points in the last 3 quarters from the bench. And the only basket that they got from the bench was from Grant Williams. And that was essentially Tatum just handing him the ball under the basket. The defense came on Tatum when he was driving to the basket, and he made the unselfish play and dished it to Grant, and Grant went up and dunked it. But like, that was a nice, easy bucket for Grant. And that's all they got from bench scoring. So bench scoring is an enormous issue for this team. And whether it's this round or the next round or the finals, if we get there, it's going to be a concern from here on out until Gordon Hayward comes back and then Marcus Smart can slot into that spot. They're just not going to get it from these guys. These guys just aren't really capable, aside from Williams, who gives you that lob threat. Hit a nice mid-range jumper as well, but really he's an around-the-basket scorer for the most part, and everyone else coming off the bench is going to be inconsistent at best when you're looking at to get points out of those guys.
Yeah, and a stat that may make Celtics fans a little happy, Brad Wanamaker did not take a shot tonight. So that's a positive sign for the bench if Brad Wanamaker is not taking any shots.
I'd rather him take a shot than Ojeleye.
Semi-Ojeleye was 0 for 3 from the 3-point line. So there's that. But I guess one of the points that I made in our preview is that we knew that they were going to rely heavily on the starting five. And I felt that being in the bubble without the travel and the consistent schedule, I thought that would give the advantage to the Celtics, knowing that they were going to have to play their starters heavy minutes. Tatum had 42 minutes, Smart had 38, Kemba had 38, Jalen 35, and Daniel Tice 30 minutes in this game. Now, if they had to, you know, hop on a plane and fly back to Boston, get, you know, go through customs, getting in at 3 a.m. and I mean, even though they're sleeping in their own beds, it's just a little bit different. And they've been in the bubble for since the middle of July. And I think they're used to that routine. And I think that'll help them in their recovery. And they're young. I mean, Kemba's right. Kemba's like the eldest statesman on the team, but they're young. And hopefully, you know, hopefully they can carry through because they're going to be relying on that starting five. So, Adam, do you think the series is over?
I don't think the series is over still, because while the Celtics have looked, you know, not, you know, they look great, you know, during stretches of these games, but Toronto's missing a lot of shots that they usually make. Now, definitely credit for the Celtics defense, because I think that the length of the Celtics defense definitely seems to be bothering their backcourt. 6 for 35 shooting threes from two guys that I think shot over 40, almost close to over a 40% clip during the season. Siakam shooting 11 for 32 in this series so far, which is way below his season average. He just doesn't look comfortable against our length either. And Norman Powell, the guy off the bench, the one guy that, other than Ibaka, that they actually go through, he's 5 for 17 in this series. So the Toronto guys are struggling out there, and today they only lost by 3, that's a little concerning to me that they're shooting that poorly, and they still only lost by 3 points today, and it was a game pretty much wire to wire. So I don't want to count them out yet. Like Mark said, I'll be shocked if the Celtics lose this series. And, you know, up 2-0 is a huge advantage. So with Toronto, they don't have Kawhi, so I don't really want to, you know, harp on last year that they, you know, they came back from 2-0 because they're a totally different team now. But, you know, I'm from Boston. I've seen some crazy things happen to Boston teams in the playoffs. So I'm not ready to count Toronto out just yet.
And I mean, the Nuggets just came back from down 3-1 to the Jazz in that series. So we know things can turn on a dime in the NBA, particularly in the playoffs. But I mean, I guess I'll play devil's advocate to myself, because even though I am concerned, it's like the Celtics played extremely well the first game, even though they had 22 turnovers and they blow you out. Then the Celtics didn't play very well today. They didn't get anything from their bench. They still had 17 turnovers. They were down 12, and they still won the game. And if you're the Raptors, they looked a little bit defeated towards the end of the game, at least in the highlights that I saw, because I listened on the radio. But their body language just kind of – Marcus Smart kind of just took the air out of them late in that game. So, it'll, you know, by no means is this series over – but it's all but over if they don't come back and win the next game. And right. those stats that Adam brought up, Trey, you know, the Lowry and Van Vliet usually shoot better. Siakam usually shoots better. I mean, I imagine you're looking at, you know, averages against the entire league over the course of a season. But Celtics are 5-1 against the Raptors this season. And those guys have struggled against the Celtics all year long, and in the second season, which we call the bubble. So, I don't know, Trey. We talked about Nick Nurse. When we first did the preview, we asked ourselves who would we despise by the end of the series. The candidates or the nominees were Siakam, Kyle Lowry, and Fred VanVleet, with an honorable mention of Nick Nurse. And Nick Nurse, oh, man. I haven't seen him in person or watched him this closely. Obviously, this is our first time playing them in the playoffs, but he is like the anti-Brad Stevens. Brad Stevens, move on to the next play. You know, even Stevens never makes any excuses. And Nick Nurse, just after the game, just rattled off tons of excuses. But he's the coach of the year. And I asked you in the last podcast, what adjustments would you make if you're Nick Nurse? And we all kind of unanimously said, hey, give Serge Ibaka more playing time. And even though Marcus Gasol fouled out, which we all thought was a good thing, Serge Ibaka was a negative 10 in the plus minus, which I believe was the worst on the team. So your counter to the Celtics was a minus 10. You blew a 12-point lead. Where do you go from here if you're the Raptors and you're Nick Nurse? What can you hang your hat on and look forward to for game three?
So you just got to shoot better. That's it. Like, I think they're playing their game, and I really think that they need to play Ibaka more like they did tonight, which was kind of forced their hand. But plus minus aside, like, Ibaka was a threat out there and Gasol wasn't. So I think the Raptors, they've been good all season. They've been doing the same things all year. Go with what works. They know it works. They just need to hit their shots. I think that's got to be the message that Nurse has to give them, because what else can you do? You can't just go out and change everything on such a small sample size. Like, it's not working, and it's not because it's a failed system or something. That's just not going to work for them. It's just they're missing a ton of shots. And yes, it is a matchup problem. The Celtics' length is giving them issues, but you got to go with what got you here.
Trey, clearly Nick Nurse didn't listen to the Section 5 podcast before game two, because he trotted out Marc Gasol again in the starting five. But if he's listening right now, what's your recommendation for him?
So Marc Gasol played 26 minutes for the Raptors tonight. Well, as a coach, I understand it's hard to just, you know, change the rotation drastically and take minutes away from players. So the recommendation is to bring him off the bench and start Serge Ibaka. If you start Serge Ibaka, then he'll get more minutes. He had 26. If you can get him up to 30 minutes, you know, 30, 32 minutes maybe, and get Gasol down closer to 20 or below, I think that would be better for them. Serge Ibaka would be better with the starting unit. He pissed me off again tonight. He kept seeming to be open for threes. He was giving me Chris Bosh 2012 vibes. But yeah, I think inserting Serge Ibaka into the starting lineup would be a good move, because I don't think you could drastically take the minutes away from Gasol, and I don't think that they're just going to go with Siakam starting that center.
Yeah, and he had a lot of those tap-outs that you were talking about to kind of save possessions and give them extra possessions. A lot of those I saw that the Raptors ultimately just didn't convert. Adam, I'm gonna ask you this question again, and I'm going to ask you about your boy, Fred VanVleet, who Adam is probably one of the most knowledgeable basketball and NBA people that I know. And he raised my eyebrows when he said Fred VanVleet was the second best player in the series. Now, mind you, you're looking at his whole body of work, how he played against the Nets, how he's played in the bubble, his stats across the year. So I ask you again, are you sticking with your – how do I phrase it? Are you sticking with your take that Fred VanVleet is the second best player in the series? And if he is, how does he get going, or what does he need to step up?
Yeah, so he actually, I'm still going to stick by it, that I still think he's the second best player in the series. And I think we saw that from him in the first half of this game. He was kind of their offense. He was they gave him the ball. They let him, they actually, you know, ran pick and rolls for him, put Lowry and Siakam and OG at the corners and kind of let him go to work on the season. It was pretty, to me, I seen them having some more success. He was hitting his threes. He was still being a pest on the defensive end. And it just seemed like in the second half, they kind of went away from him and went more towards Pascal and Lowry setting up the offense with him kind of just, you know, waiting on the wing for a kick out. I think if Toronto wants success, they need to get Fred VanVleet the ball more. And somehow they need Norman Powell to get involved in their offense, because before the season ended, he was dropping like 20, 25 a game every night for them, you know, consistent either off the bench or starting. So that's how I think they could get back in this series. But
it's going to be 15 minutes. A lot of,
it has to be. Yeah. Norman Powell didn't have any burn today. So it's going to have to be a lot of Fred VanVleet, I think, if Toronto's going to have a chance in this series.
Fred VanVleet, 3-for-12 from 3-point range. 8-for-22 overall from the field. He did get 7 assists and 5 rebounds, but he was also a -3 in the plus minus. I really don't know where the Raptors go from here, because this is a trend now. This is over the last 3 games in the bubble where VanVleet, Lowry, Siakam have all struggled against the Celtics when they were 11-0 against everyone else in the bubble. And not to stray away from this game, but last night you had a defensive player of the year who shied away from guarding the other team's best player that was killing him in crunch time. And that's I'm talking about Giannis. And tonight you have the coach of the year making excuses, complaining about Jason Tatum's free throws when his team blew a 12-point lead. And again, Celtics 2-10 in the last game, 12 games officiated by Tony Brothers. And if you're an NBA referee, I mean, you're going to take a lot of shit, but the coach of the year is complaining about the refs after their team blew a 12-point lead. And all these refs are together in the bubble. They get into talk and converse and meet and discuss what they've seen from these games. And we'll see if this strategy works in Nick Nurse's favor, because if you're a ref, you might not give them any benefit of the doubt going into game 3, because they blew the game. And I'm wondering, Adam, is this just a situation where not only do the Celtics have the most high-end talent, but Brad Stevens is just outmatching Nick Nurse?
I think it's definitely Brad Stevens is pushing the right buttons in the series, and Nick Nurse is just – it seems like he hasn't been able to even push a button.
He doesn't have those button options.
He definitely doesn't. And it's more, I think, the season length is giving them issues more than anything. And they just – I haven't seen any adjustments from them. And that's kind of that's definitely surprising from a guy that's won Coach of the Year, that has won a championship, beat a vaunted Golden State Warriors team in that championship. So
Without KD and Klay Thompson.
Yes.
He came back from 2-0 against Milwaukee, too.
Came back from 2-0 against
it's a fair point.
So, but he just – I think he needs to do something about that Gasol matchup, because it just – like Mark alluded to with Cantor, it just doesn't – it doesn't seem like it fits. And it seems like a guy like Ibaka, a guy like Norman Powell – they could use guys like more athletic guys that could, you know, be threats on the offensive end instead of just, you know what Gasol's going to do. He's either going to set a screen or he's going to pop. That's all Gasol's going to do on the offensive end. With Ibaka, you have more versatility. With Powell, you have just more athleticism on the court that could, you know, potentially match the athletes that we have on the court. So it's going to be interesting to see what Nurse does or what he doesn't do. You know, in games 3, 4, and
Trey had recommended starting Norman Powell and or Serge Ibaka. And I'm wondering if you still feel like maybe that should be an option for them.
I think it has to be. You're down 2-0. If Nurse doesn't switch it up, then I don't think that's a good indictment on him as a coach.
I went with Brad Stevens on the last pod.
Okay.
Edge. I just think he has the better players to work with, and he's going to utilize them to the best of his ability, and it's going to work out in the Celtics' favor. As far as Norman Powell or Serge Ibaka starting, I think either or would be a good situation. You want to minimize Marc Gasol's minutes as much as possible. I think Norman Powell starting is probably their best bet. Gives them more shooting. So I think they should rely a little bit more on their guards. Norman Powell needs more minutes. He can't have 13 minutes. That's an indictment on Nick Nurse.
So we've had a whole discussion about this game, and we haven't even talked about Jason Tatum yet, who had his career high in points for the playoffs, who led the team through the end of the third and early into the fourth when the Celtics couldn't buy a basket before Marcus Smart went nuts. You've had Jamal Murray go off. You've had Donovan Mitchell go off, albeit with much more shot attempts. Young players are breaking out in the bubble, and Jason Tatum is as good as any of them because he does it on both ends of the floor. And tonight, most impressive is probably the 6 assists that he got. So we can't end this pod without talking a little bit about Jason Tatum. And Trey, I'll start back to you. We'll go a little bit reverse snake mode. What's your thoughts on Jason Tatum and how he carried this team when they needed it most, when they were really struggling to find any scoring?
He's just good at getting to the line. He's getting better and better at getting to the line, attacking the defense. Whatever the defense gives him, he's gonna look to get fouled, create a shot. He's just getting better and better every game. To see him end up with 34 points, it was a quiet 34 points. I didn't see like back-to-back sidestep threes. It wasn't like that type of game. But he ended up having a kind of an efficient game, 8 for 17. Like you said, 6 assists, 8 rebounds. He always has high rebounding games and ended up with 34 points. So, you know, just based on that, you know they can't guard Tatum. The Raptors can't guard Tatum. It's a matter of, you know, do we want to scramble at the point guard? Do we want to take away Kemba? Or something like that. They have to try to take a different approach and get as much points out of other guys because they're not going to be able to stop Tatum. He might not have 34 next game, but he's good for 25.
Yeah, he's plus. I'm starting to be a big fan of real plus minus. But plus 5, even though Semi Ojeleye led the team in plus minus with a plus 7. But Jason.
There's your argument against plus minus because Semi sucked.
I know, right? But Jason,
Marcus
Gasol
was a plus 7 today too.
Marcus Gasol is a plus 7. Serge Ibaka is a minus 10. It's all over the place, but it's a fun stat to just throw out there. It makes you feel good about your basketball IQ. You can quote plus minus. So Mark, what's your impression of Jason Tatum? And for that matter, Jaylen Brown chipped in with 16 points. Kemba Walker with 17 points. That trio as a whole. Without Gordon Hayward, how impressive have they been where they all sort of can chip in and carry the team when the team needs it, whether it's collectively or at different spots in the game?
Well, we talked about them needing to get the 70 or so points for the Celtics to win. Yep. And tonight they had 67 between the three of them. And it doesn't really matter how they get them, whether it's one guy with 34 or if they all have, you know, 22, 23, whatever. They got close to that number that we thought they needed to have, and they ended up squeaking by and winning the game. Kemba struggled early. Jaylen struggled later. But they all did enough where they were able to win the game. And it was mostly because of the way Tatum played. The two numbers that just jump off the stat sheet at me with Tatum tonight are 17 field goal attempts for 34 points. And he was 14 for 14 from the line. Not only is he getting to the line, he's converting. He converted every time he got there tonight. And they needed every last one of those free throws. And that's the sign of a superstar, is someone who can give you 34 points but doesn't need 30, 35 shots to get it every night. He's getting everyone else involved. He's playing defense. He's getting rebounds. Anything at all that they need him to do, he does it. And then he scores his points with a minimal amount of attempts and lets the other guys get involved, lets the other guys stay hot. They're not just standing there watching him play like Houston does, where you know they say, okay, here you go, Harden. We're going to just watch you play basketball now, and everybody else could potentially get cold. Everyone else is in the rhythm of the game because he doesn't need all of the shots to get to 30, 35 points.
And he doesn't take all of them, and I give a lot of credit for that to Brad Stevens, because the Celtics have an offensive strategy. They have an offensive identity. They have an offensive philosophy. And as much as everyone dumped on Brett Brown for really not making any adjustments or having any philosophy in the Philly series, I'm not seeing much different from Toronto in this game. In this series. Field goal percentage aside. And Jason Tatum has been able to thrive in a system where the ball moves, he gets his touches, but late in the clock, we know it's going to go to him. So, Adam, going forward, an article just came out today from Chris Mannix, sort of going over all the trades that the Celtics didn't make for Jimmy Butler, for Paul George. I don't want to include Anthony Davis in that because they publicly came out and said they wouldn't re-sign in Boston. But all the criticism that the Celtics have had for the assets. They burned away the assets. They didn't trade the assets. But now they're looking up and they're 2-0 in the series without Gordon Hayward, being led by those guys that Danny Ainge chose not to trade. So as a Celtics fan, how encouraging is it for you to be led by Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, knowing that Jason Tatum was just 19 2 years ago? We can't say he's 19 anymore, but
we can, and we do.
We can bring up when he was 19. He was just 19 like 2.5 years ago. He's 21 and 22.
He has an NBA record. He's been 19 for 3 years. No one else has ever done that.
He's only 19. As a Celtics fan, how good is it to see these guys, after the departure of Kyrie Irving, Al Horford, Aaron Baines, Terry Rozier, Marcus Morris,
James Young?
I might be missing someone, but they're the leaders of this team. They're playoff experienced. They've been in the playoffs every year of their career. They're battle tested. And now all of that is starting to come together for Danny Ainge and the Celtics. Can you speak to that a little bit?
It's great as a Celtic fan, because it feels like for the first time and since probably Pierce and Antoine that we've had two young swingmen that haven't even entered the prime of their career yet. And the difference between Pierce and Antoine with these guys is that these guys just seem like they're more, at this point, rounded basketball players than Pierce and Antoine were at, their first, the first years of their careers, which is actually, they were older than what Tatum and Brown are now, by the time they got to their third and fourth years. So I'm extremely encouraged. I'm glad that Danny didn't, sell the assets for potentially a rental to try to, keep guys like maybe Kyrie happy by getting more talent and trading away, Jaylen and Jason. So, I think the sky's the limit for us with those two in a Boston uniform. But one thing I did want to kind of get on, I didn't have any chance to kind of shit on Nick Nurse for a little bit. So I wanted to say that in the third quarter that Tatum had for us today, he kind of, while Toronto had the lead, he kind of kept the scoring by his ability to get to the free throw line, many times during that third quarter. It seemed like possession after possession, Tatum was getting to the line. And I don't think there were really any questionable foul calls called for Tatum. It seemed like he got fouled every single time he got to the hoop. And also, Toronto fouled us a couple of times shooting threes. So for Nurse to complain about foul calls, he needs to get on his team more and do what we're doing and playing defense without fouling.
And Trey, sorry to interrupt, but we thought that was the key for the Celtics going into the series, playing defense without fouling. I guess that's the key for any NBA team. But
one thing I said to myself when I seen I think Smart drew a three. Kemba drew a three. I don't know if Tatum drew one. He might have drew one, but I know Tatum got a
Jalen had one early too.
Yeah, so in my head I was like, wow, like we're playing Toronto's game against them, because you know, we've seen countless games where Lowry's throwing his body around, getting a cheap three. Or Van Fleet's going around the screen and just stops short and goes up for a shot and gets a cheap foul call. We're doing that to Toronto now, and I don't think they like how it feels.
And Trey, I want you to jump in right after this, but I'm happy to keep dumping on Nick Nurse. And one of the most indicative plays of the game was at down the stretch in those last seconds of the game, they had a timeout to use, and Nick Nurse didn't even call a timeout to draw up a play. And that goes to show that the Celtics have been, you know, very stingy against them in the half court set. So, you know, they'll take their chances in transition. But as a coach, I'm guessing you'd want to call a timeout and draw a play up there, Trey. What do you think?
It's definitely a missed opportunity to draw up a play for your team. So I think he should be regretting that.
I mean, unless you're like Phil Jackson. You know, if you're Phil Jackson and you got Mike or Kobe, or you're Greg Popovich, go for it. Or Bill Belichick, you know, against the Seattle Seahawks in the Super Bowl, then yeah, keep that timeout in your back pocket. But that just shows that Nick Nurse either didn't have anything to run with or was afraid of the Celtics half court defense.
Right. So just to touch on what Adam had said, like, none of the fouls were Harden-esque. Like, he didn't drive into the lane, flail his arms, and just get the foul call. That's not what happened. They were all earned. And then just harping on the Jimmy Butler, Paul George, all the guys that could have come here. The only one that I seriously feel like I considered was Jimmy Butler. We had his boy Jay Crowder. We had Avery Bradley at the time. And we had that third overall pick. And the question was going to be, what was we going to have to give up to bring in Jimmy Butler? And I heard a lot of rumors. It was Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder and the third pick, or a combination of those. And it didn't sound right. Ultimately, Danny Ainge made the right decision, and we have the Jays. It would have been nice to have a Jimmy Butler pairing him with Jason Tatum. But Jaylen Brown plays the role perfectly, and we couldn't have asked for better.
I mean, Jimmy Butler, though. I mean, man, there's a dude whose game I respect more than anybody this season. It's Jimmy Butler. When we did our Celtics season preview, I questioned them, like, is the Jimmy Butler effect going to be that real for Miami? Because you guys had Miami getting the fourth or fifth seed, and I had Miami not making the playoffs. I think more so I wasn't really expecting the emergence of Duncan Robinson and Tyler Herro and Kendrick Nunn and those guys, the supporting cast. But Jimmy Butler is like I said, he sounds like the classic school bully. Like, Jimmy Butler's waiting at the locker. Jimmy Butler's waiting for you by the school bus. Jimmy Butler's behind you in the lunch line. He's about to take your lunch money. Like, Jimmy Butler turned TJ Warren into a pumpkin. He made Giannis kind of defer to the coach for the defensive scheme as to why he didn't guard Jimmy Butler at the end of the game. Jimmy Butler's the man. And I guess when you look back at his stints in Chicago and Minnesota and Philly, like, he's kind of standing on top right now. So, Mark, I guess to kind of end this pod up, like, who do you see as the second best player in the East right now? Assuming that the best player in the East is Giannis Antetokounmpo, even though his game looked extremely limited against Miami the other day, but we can do a quick lightning round. Who's the second best player in the East?
Ooh, this is tough because you're really catching me off guard with this, but
I can run some names off for you.
Yeah.
You have
Butler comes to mind.
Butler, Tatum. You have Embiid. You have Tatum.
It's not Embiid.
You have Tatum. You have,
I mean, can I take Kevin Durant? Like, are we counting those guys, or are they guys who played this year?
Let's take – well, I kind of stole this from ESPN. I read this in an ESPN article today about who was considered to be the second best player in the East. They were not considering Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving, who have been haven't played. But is it Tatum?
It's – I got three names. Tatum, Butler, and Brad Beal.
A lot of these folks threw Siakam's name out there, and I think he's just been exposed. He's been exposed.
I don't know that he's been exposed. Like, I think I'm ready to come to your side and say, yeah, I'd probably take Jalen over Siakam, but I'm not sure that I'd say he's been exposed. I think he's an excellent player, but he's not as good as Tatum.
Trey, who do you have as the second best player in the Eastern Conference right now?
First off, who's first?
Yeah, you know what? I was going to – that's too much of a hot take right now.
Yeah, yeah. It's oh, you still got to go. Okay.
I don't know.
Giannis is dominant at what he's good at, even though his game is very limited.
But we're seeing with Miami that if you defend the right way and you have a go-to guy who can do just enough, that you can beat the Bucks. I have them beating the Bucks in this series. We'll see what happens. But it could be Jimmy Butler. It could be Tatum, or it could be Beal, just like Mark said. But if I had to choose one, I would say the second best is Jimmy Butler. That's just totally skipping over Giannis because of his lack of clutch ability.
Adam, you just kind of jumping back in on this. We were discussing who is the second best player in the Eastern Conference, assuming that Giannis is the number one player in the East, and that's sort of based off of that conversation we had of Celtics not trading for Jimmy Butler, you know, not trading for some of these other guys and ending up with Jason Tatum. Would you consider Tatum the second best player in the East right now, or are you going to go in a different direction like Embiid or Butler?
That's a really tough question. I think it's close between Tatum and Butler. I don't want to say I give either one the edge over the other one right now, because you can't really point to playoff success, because Butler's never really led a team deep into the playoffs. Tatum was on a team that went deep into the playoffs, but you know that was kind of a supporting cast team. It wasn't like Tatum, you know, was our main option every single night. So Tatum's leap has been, you know, extraordinary over these past, you know, couple of months of the season. And Butler's been kind of a consistent presence for Miami this year. And he especially stepped up in game one of the, you know, Eastern Conference semifinals against Milwaukee. So I'm going to take the easy way out and call them, you know, both number two in the East.
So we'll end this podcast with a prediction. Are we going to get a chance to find out? Are we going to see Butler versus Jason Tatum in the Eastern Conference Finals? Adam?
I hope so.
Trey?
Yes, we are.
Mark?
I hope so, because Milwaukee's been a tough out for the Celtics, but I think Milwaukee beats Miami.
I think we're going to have Jimmy Butler versus Jason Tatum in the Eastern Conference Finals. So that wraps it up. Please, as I always say at the end of the podcast, rate, subscribe, review, check out the Section 5 podcast. We're on all major platforms, Spotify, Apple, SoundCloud, you name it. We're there. We appreciate you listening, and we'll check you on the next podcast.
Yo, baby.
A little sweepy, baby.
Philly sweep.